I'm David Schreiner Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I talk to on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. In this mini-series, we're talking about how so many professionals today seem to be floundering, why they're looking for answers in all the wrong places, and we offer some tips about what they should be doing instead. We know how lonely it can be to be a business owner, and getting support you can trust is really critical to success. In today's episode, you'll hear how veteran entrepreneur Debbie Keterer offers some great tips to help you find advice from people who are more likely to be on your side. I really want to hear from you, our listeners. After you listen to this episode, connect with me on LinkedIn or Twitter. And if you want to talk, we can find time to do so. If you like what you hear, please share this episode with your colleagues and friends. I know your time is precious, and I want to thank you for joining us today. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Debbie Keterer. Debbie is a veteran of the retail industry, where in 2001, she founded Chalk Dust Consulting, which is a strategic online consulting practice with a client list of Fortune 500 companies that include beauty, fashion, luxury consumer products, consumer electronics, media companies, not-for-profits, and startups. Debbie is the co-author with Mary Beth Mehta of Beauty Pearls for Chemo Girls, which is chosen as one of Amazon editor's picks for 2014. Luxury Daily named Debbie as one of the top 25 women to watch in luxury for 2015. She's a member of a number of organizations, including being a founding member of the Digital Innovation and Marketing Advisory Council at the Fox School, Temple University. Debbie, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, David.
It's great to have you on. And I know that you've been in business for a long time, and I wonder if you could start off by talking just a little bit about your own trajectory, starting with your corporate work.
Sure. So I was a corporate employee for 13 years. I worked for a very large beauty company and ended up rising up the corporate ladder fairly quickly, and decided after having my two children that I wanted to take a different track. And so in 1998, decided to leave the company and become a founding member of a new media company, as they were called at the time, which built an asset management system really for creative departments. And in 2001, after doing that work, I realized that there was a niche in the market that wasn't being filled. And so began looking at creating Chalk Dust Consulting, where we ended up maintaining enterprise websites that were retail-based, basically marketing and e-commerce websites, because nobody at the time wanted to do that. It was a great opportunity to start a business, work with some really smart people, and that business has continued till now.
So actually, this is a very common track, right? To be corporate, do well in corporate, and then for various personal reasons, to sort of follow the entrepreneurial journey and go out on your own. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about how that's been and maybe some of the ups and downs that you've experienced.
So I think for many people, both men and women, you kind of get into a place in your career where you say, is this really what it's all about? And for me, I had a pretty large department that I was running. It was a global department. I was traveling. I was doing lots of things, and I was really thinking, like, is this really where I want to be? And I think having children and being kind of tied to that was a real issue. And so in essence, what I decided to do was go on my own because I wanted more freedom. And what's interesting is when you start your own business, you think there's going to be a lot more freedom, but you end up having different kinds of freedom. So in essence, you don't have that boss that's looking for you to come in, but you have clients that you're really responsible for. And so I think for me, there was this sense of just I call it like an integrated life, where my work life and my home life became integrated. And it really became important for me to be able to really kind of make those collide. I don't believe in a work-life balance. I don't think that happens anymore. And even back in 2001, it wasn't really happening. And so the reason behind really starting my own business was to kind of have that type of freedom.
Right. So your work structure could be more in alignment with your personal values.
Exactly.
So Debbie, I know that with I speak to a lot of entrepreneurs, and with the ups and downs of business life, there are often places where we get stuck. And particularly when you've been at it for a while, you've probably seen various episodes where this has happened. And it's common as an entrepreneur to look for help when we can't seem to solve problems on our own. I wondered if you could talk a little bit about what some of your experiences have been trying to get help from somebody outside your company when you seem to have hit a plateau or hit roadblocks.
So since I've been in business almost 15 years, I have done a number of different things. So initially I would confide in old colleagues, but they weren't entrepreneurs, so they didn't necessarily have the same experiences. So that was not so easy and that was not so great. Then I actually would consult with my team, which were my lawyers and accountants. And again, the challenge with consulting with them and trying to get advice from them was that as an entrepreneur, most of the people you surround yourself with, you are paying. And so there's somewhat of a, not an ulterior motive, but they want to continue to work with you too. So I never was sure if the advice was truly real for me or really based on the relationship I had with them. And then I decided to join some business groups, which I think have been the most successful for me. And I now also have an executive coach, but that's associated with one of the groups. So these business groups, I feel, are filled with people that are similar to me as an entrepreneur or me as a business person. And the ability for them to advise, whether through experiences or through just sheer advice, it's because it's based on experience and the things that they've encountered. And I think that's a lot better than straight up like business 101, this is what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, no, it's interesting that you should mention when you're hiring experts to help you solve a particular problem or get past a roadblock or setback you may have had in your business, that you've always been suspicious about a conflict of interest in the relationship because you're paying somebody. One of the things that seems to be occurring in the marketplace is that there seem to be more, and I'm going to go beyond like the specialist of attorneys, accountants, etc., but there seem to be more people who call themselves business coaches than ever before. And it's a trend that I've observed, and I wondered if in your experience as an entrepreneur, what you've seen with some of your entrepreneur colleagues, if that's a trend that you have noticed.
Absolutely. I think almost every entrepreneur I know, that's not true, many of them have coaches and on different levels, you know, different kinds of coaches. But yes, there are many, many people feel at least there's someone there to advise them on their next steps or any of the kind of hurdles that they're hitting.
So why do you think it is that so many professionals seem to be struggling today in spite of the rise in the number of gurus or experts who are ready to help?
Because I feel like in all the experts that we actually try to entertain, that they also know just about as much as we do or less. I think when you're an entrepreneur and you're trying to do things, part of the reason you are is because you have a vision, right? You have something that you see that you really feel you want to accomplish or something that you know the world needs. And I think when you try to consult people about the world that you're in, they don't necessarily know exactly what you're doing or what you're in. And so in some ways, I feel coaching can be very good, but it can also be very limited because they're not in your brain. They don't know really what you're trying to accomplish. And so they can give you steps to take, but are those steps always really the right? You know, sometimes it's very rote. This is what you should do. Well, that may not work for what you're trying to accomplish.
So this like one size fits all mentality, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, it's kind of like a lot of coaches have this roadmap that they take you on, right? Here's what we need to do now, and here's what you do next. And I think that those are not always the way you need to go. Part of being an entrepreneur is you have to take many forks in the road to be successful. You need to pivot every few years to make sure your business remains successful. And that may not be where you are in your business.
What have been some of your own personal experiences where you have made some pivots? And what caused you to make those pivots? What kinds of help?
Yeah, so that's really a good question. I would say that about 6 to 8 years ago, I called it my shedding. I shed. I had all these people that were around me in different capacities. And I just got to this place where I was like, I can't work with these people anymore. And it wasn't like I'm going to get rid of everybody. It was this slow process of just saying, I'm not going to do this anymore. And I'm not going to do that anymore. And in that pivot, it allowed me to kind of shed some of the dead weight that I had, and I was able to kind of make a fresh start. It took about 6 months, and it was very clearly in one of my business groups that I started talking about the shedding process. And again, a coach would never use those words, but it was really important for me to kind of sit back. I had been in business for 8 years. You know, it was a point where I really needed to rethink what I was doing, and I needed to get rid of things that just felt like they weren't working anymore. And a lot of those things were people.
So, Debbie, why do you think that being able to have this conversation with a business group was helpful to you when it may not have worked with a business coach?
Because it was people had different experiences. Some of the people in the room had been in business for 10 years, some had been in business for 5, some 15. And so when they were sharing their experiences and advising, it was clearly based on something that had either been successful or not. And therefore, it wasn't just a process or a system. It was, when I did this, this is what happened. Or I had gotten rid of my accountant because I just felt like I was in the same place, and this was why. And then you can ask questions like, well, what were you seeing? And then when you can relate them back yourself, you can start to say, hey, this is really something that can make this different for me. And recently I had an experience where I had to negotiate a contract, and in that contract I was getting nowhere. And so my business group was able to really work with them. And in the end we realized it was the contract that was the problem, not the person. And so I had to go back in and redo the contract in a way that made sense. I don't know if my coach could have ever said that to me. This was based on all different disciplines in the room, people with different experiences that were able to share how they had gotten through similar experiences.
Right. So it's the variety and the depth of collective experiences that you have in a community or in a group that you're not going to have in one person.
Exactly. And I think what that gives you is, and then you can also take that outside of the group too, right? You might meet someone in the group that you see you really have an affinity to and say, yes, I really want to actually strike up a relationship because this could really help me in business going forward as well. So that group can grow whereas a coach is a coach.
What do you think are some of the elements that are really important for this kind of group environment to be helpful to somebody like you?
So I think first is trust. You know, so as entrepreneurs, you kind of bring topics to a conversation that really are usually very sensitive. So the people in the room you have to trust. So if you get into a room of people and a couple of people you're not that comfortable with, you're not going to share necessarily the depth that you need to actually maybe make some different decisions. I also think you need to have people that you feel are intelligent or at the same level as you so that you feel you're getting information that you would be able to take with you and say, okay, you know what, if that person thinks like that, then maybe I should kind of rethink the way I'm doing this. And I think you have to have like-minded people. I think when you're in a room of entrepreneurs versus a mixed room of entrepreneurs and CEOs or presidents that are employees, they're very different thought processes.
Right. So if you were looking for a group now, how would you identify a group where you think trust is going to work and work well?
So you interview. I mean, I think a lot of these groups you go into, you actually have to go in and interview and you have to see if the groups are going to work. So, I mean, when you join, like say a Vistage, and you become part of this group, you attend before you go. And then once you're in it, you can see if the people in that group really work for you. And if they don't, there are other Vistage groups that you can join. The same thing with Entrepreneurs Organization. You can do the same. You can go in and you can figure out the groups that might work for you. So I think in these types of business groups, you just don't land in a place and say, okay, this is who I'm going to be working with. You actually do have an opportunity to make sure that the group you're in really will be able to, answer the needs that you have for your business.
Mm-hmm. And what are some examples of what you've experienced when you've said, oh, I think this group is not going to work for me? Or on the other hand, yes, this group really speaks to me.
I think it's also attitude. You know, some people come in and their attitude is very much of either a little negative, a little positive. And you have to figure out in the dynamic of that group if you're going to actually feel that you can really speak your mind on the things that you want to do. Don't join a business group if you feel like half the people in the room are going to judge you or you feel like you're going to judge them. I mean, that's just terrible. And then there's also, you know, there's also the opportunity of really looking at the group from what at this point do I need? And then I've moved groups. Like one group may have worked for a while and then you say, okay, I need to move on to this one because I'm done. This isn't really satisfying what I want anymore. I also, one other thing, David, is I have another small group that I belong to that's just four people that we just meet once a month and we just discuss ideas. And it's very, and so no coach is involved. We're almost coaching each other. And we all come from very different areas. You know, one's in IT, one's in sales. I'm in kind of marketing, digital. And the other person actually owns an organizational type of business. And so we all come from different places, but that actually gives us an opportunity to be really open and honest because it's such a small group.
How did you end up being part of that group?
So they were actually part of other groups we had belonged to before, and now they're all in different groups, but this smaller group just gives a forum, and it's really only 2 hours that we meet, but it's just a forum where we can all discuss things that are just a little bit more intimate because it's a tinier group, and we have enough time to kind of share. And usually in that meeting, one person has something we deal with each week rather than multiple people needing to deal with things.
Now, do you use a particular structure in that group of four?
Yeah, we kind of have goal setting. We do some goal setting and then we talk about kind of immediate, like what's happening, what happened this month on a positive side, what happened this month that your challenges are, and then just kind of speaking to, okay, so this is where we are right now. What are my goals for next month? So it's very, you know, that I think is one of the most challenging things for most business owners is setting those goals and keeping them. This kind of keeps you honest.
Do you think that there's a difference between a group that has a formal facilitator versus one that doesn't in terms of how the group functions or maybe how people maintain accountability or something like that?
I do. I think even in our small group, we have somewhat of a leader. Each one of us leads, but there's always like one person who's more of the facilitator. And that's okay. And I think when that person's not there, somebody else picks up for it. I think the moderator of the group needs to be it depends. Like if you have the same moderator over years, you may want to leave because you feel like, okay, I've gotten enough out of this. If you feel the moderator is really smart, like I had a moderator that had three different degrees. He had a business degree, a law degree, and a psychology degree. I love that because he was able to really share on so many different levels. And see, for me, that's a great coach because not only are they speaking about your personal, because the psychology of it all, but they have some law and they have some business. So when things come up, usually that's touched upon in all businesses, right? So a moderator like that to me could be very successful. When a moderator is there just to facilitate, I feel like that doesn't lend itself to be as successful as if you have someone who can really kind of participate.
Do you think that there is a difference in either feeling or outcome for the participants in a group where you're paying money to be part of the group versus one where you're not paying money to be part of the group?
No, I think as a business owner, you're willing to pay money when you feel like it works for you. And believe me, like I've definitely talked to people in groups who say, wow, this is really expensive. I don't want to do this anymore. But they end up always coming back because the reality is, where else are you going? So in these groups, I mean, you're going to a coach who's going to, you're going to pay it anybody, right? So they kind of stay. I think people that leave those groups, it's more because it's not satisfying what they really, they're not getting out of the group what they needed to. Sometimes it's money-based, but I don't think money really drives it. And I think that's more solopreneurish, David. Like if you're a single entrepreneur, that money is much more important than as you get to be a bigger company.
Right. So what other factors, if it's not money, what other factors cause people to either want to be in groups or want to leave groups?
I think if you want to leave a group, money can be one of them. It's also the group itself. It could just be that people have left and new people have come and the dynamic of the group has changed enough so that you don't feel like you're really working well there anymore. I think part of it could be that you're so overwhelmed at work yourself that you just can't make the meetings and therefore you're paying all this money to go to meetings you can't go to and you're not attending any of the events that they have and so therefore what's the point? I think in joining a group, it's that I feel like you join groups when you feel like you really need that, the support of other people to continue to grow your business or to help your business if it's in the opposite place where it's declining and you need to figure out how to kind of get it back up to speed.
Debbie, do you think that there may be a difference in the way we behave in society that has made certain kinds of groups more popular or more relevant today, or maybe exist today when they wouldn't have existed, let's say, a generation ago?
You know, I feel like I'm an older entrepreneur, so it's a little different. I think these groups and the groups that I'm in where there are people that are in their like late 20s to early 40s, this social piece of this is really important for them. And I think when I say social, like we're all, you can be on Yammer, you can be on LinkedIn, you can be on Link, you can do, you know, there's all these places that you can go and really have an ongoing conversation. And so in these groups, there's some closed communities where you can really get advice from them as well. And I think that that is very different from years ago where you didn't have this opportunity to take what you're doing in a room and move it outside of the telephone and really bring into a place where that conversation can continue to go on and on in the social forums.
That's a really interesting observation. And I've certainly notice the same thing, that we're all pulled in so many different directions in terms of where to spend our time and where to devote our attention in interacting with other people. And there's so many different channels, both online and offline, where you can do that, that finding a place where you can have a meaningful, in-depth conversation and develop relationships over time, I think it has different kind of importance than it might have a few decades ago.
Absolutely. I think that there was no importance decades ago. I mean, I think right now, and I think what's interesting is for those of us who've ridden this wave, I mean, I started in digital a long time ago and kind of was a creator of a number of different things. When I look at that and kind of where it's come to and the fruition of all of those pieces that we put together, it's kind of like, oh my gosh, can you believe that this is where we've gotten to, is pretty amazing. I mean, when I see the way that my own children communicate, I mean, they never use the phone. The texting is the only thing that they actually do, right? So we've come to a place where nobody knew how to type 30 years ago and everybody types at 100 words a minute, right? So you know, when you
think
about
these little devices with one finger.
Right, exactly. And so when you look at that and you see how much things have changed, I think it's just, and I think it's going to just continue exponentially. I mean, I just feel like we're at a point where, you know, some of my friends say, oh, well, you know, our kids don't do anything. They just are on their phones all the time. And I feel like they're way more social than we were because they're talking to 25 people in a group where we had one person we could talk to, right? So it's really that phenomenon of groups that can continue on and the relationships you can have and that reach out that we could never have before.
So with that in mind, you know, there are more and more people are leaving corporate life to become entrepreneurs, probably more than ever before. And I think, you know, the recession several years ago probably accelerated that trend. I wondered what piece of advice would you offer someone who was leaving corporate, kind of like you did, when you started your first business? What kind of advice would you offer them in terms of how to think about how to move forward, how to get started as an entrepreneur, and how to move forward when this is not the first thing they're doing as they're in their professional career? You know, this is like the second phase. What kind of advice would you offer them in terms of how to think about being successful and in particular, where to look for help and support to be successful?
That's a very big question. Okay, so here's what I'm going to go down a couple of roads here. So when we think about startups, many people think about startups as funded startups, right? So I'm going to go out, I have a great idea, and I'm going to go get funding for my startup. That's not how you leave corporate America and go into your own business.
No, it's not. And most startups do not have funding.
Right.
Very few do.
So I think, and I actually work with a number of startups that look for funding. And so I think that there's this, but I do think, David, in the younger generations, that there's peace around startups is a little bit about that. I think that the people who've been in a career for 10 or 15 years and want to leave, here's some advice. Definitely try to have a client when you open your business. If you think you're going to do all this work and get everything set up and then go find a client, that's very, very difficult to do. Most of us have the ability to find that first client because we have been working, we have relationships. Really try to start your business where you at least have one client coming into it, because otherwise you spend a lot of time, energy, and your savings in order to try to build that business without it. One of the most difficult things about being in your own business is having business and getting more business, right? So how are you going to track that up, and what support do you need in order for that to actually happen? So I think that's the other piece that's really important here is when you do start your own business, remember you have to have a brand. People need to be aware that you exist. You should have your own website and business cards. But the most important thing is that you really should think about who is my very first client going to be and get them maybe even before everything else is developed. So many of us have these relationships in our corporate world. Make sure you keep those relationships and figure out how to move that forward.
Okay. And what advice can you offer in terms of getting help and support beyond that first client so that you can, let's assume you have the first client, you're out of the gate, things are working, you're getting paid, and then what?
Okay, so I think it depends. Based on your business, doing some networking is really important, so joining some networking groups. I find people do like 8 of them. There's no reason for that. Find 1 or 2 that will actually help you to really start to build a business outside of the people that you've known before. And start to build around you so you have that support. And a lot of those people are doing what you're doing and may be in business a little bit longer than you, and so can even help you support you in that, oh, here's a great thing to do. I mean, I actually do a lot of mentoring, so finding someone who's owned a business for a long time and helping younger entrepreneurs, and just not age-wise, but just new entrepreneurs, really start their businesses and helping them think through some of the things they need to do. You know, so many people kind of don't necessarily have their MBAs when they do this, and they're going out and they're trying to say, oh, I can do all this stuff, but haven't really touched upon those items. Like, you know, you may not be the best accountant, you may not be the best whatever. So you kind of have to say, okay, so where do I get my support in finding good people that can be my accountant, that can be my lawyer? I know so many entrepreneurs who don't ever use lawyers to look at their contracts, but that's a really key part of being successful. So finding kind of an entrepreneurial mentor, taking some classes in and around entrepreneurship or in the field you're in and the business you have can also introduce you to other people that can actually support and maintain kind of what you're doing.
That's great. Great piece of advice. So Debbie, tell us a little bit about the kind of work that you do in your business.
So my business has evolved over many, many years. And so ChalkTest actually does a lot of work in e-commerce global rollout. So we really help large companies take their North American sites and roll them out across the world globally. We also do a lot of strategy work around user experience design. We do a lot of work around a lot of strategic work to help companies kind of think through their next steps. I work with a number of startups just to kind of help them position themselves. So strategy, I think, would be a big part of what ChalkTest does, but we also have a very nice program management office that we're able to go in and really kind of help streamline and things better for companies as they're growing their digital businesses. It's mostly focused on digital.
And how can listeners learn more about you and your work?
They can check me out on LinkedIn. I'm actually not a big press person, so I don't have that much out there in the sense, but that would be the way. And if you, it's funny, I have a very different approach to business in the sense that because I have such large clients, I can't do any advertising. Most people don't know this, but you can't do publicity advertising around any of the major businesses. So we have a very quiet business and 98% of our work is through referral.
That's an important thing for people to hear. Debbie, this has been a very interesting conversation, enlightening about entrepreneurship, how to get started, how to grow, in particular, how to get help, where to get help, where not to get help. And I think some great tips. So thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. My guest today has been Debbie Keterer, founder and principal of Chalk Dust Consulting. Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tandis Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed my discussion with Debbie Keterer about getting help and how to find support structures where people really are on your side. What has your experience been when you've hit a plateau? What would you like to learn through this podcast that would give you the support you need? Would you like to connect with any of our guests to learn more? Communicate with me on LinkedIn and Twitter so we can continue the discussion. Or you can call my personal phone number, 646-216-9306. I really would like to hear from you. If you like what you've heard, please share this episode with your colleagues and friends, and it would help a great deal if you would write a review on iTunes so that new people can find us. Next week, we have a really exciting episode with my guest, Tony Award winner, Vivek Tiwari. Vivek comes back for a second appearance on Smashing the Plateau, where he and I break through the myth of the all-powerful individual genius. It's an episode you won't want to miss. I hope you've enjoyed what you've learned. I know your time is precious, and I want to thank you for spending some of it with us today.